Monk puts it up. And Curry's got the board. Green gets tied up. And a technical has been assessed. Sabonis is down.
Let me say this. Draymond stepped on him, but Sabonis grabbed his leg first.
Domantas Sabonis writhing in pain.
Now watch the end of this play. As he goes down, watch him grab Draymond right there. Now, that right there is where the foul came in. So he grabs Draymond's leg right there. Now Draymond steps on him.
This is Kevin Harlan, the voice of the NBA on TNT and Monday Night Football on Westwood One Radio. You're listening to Bay Area Sports Wrap with Lowell Tuckerman, Marco Ukalovic, and Ryan Leon.
Lowell Tuckerman with Marco Ukalovic and Ryan Leon getting you ready for Game 3 of the Warriors and Kings in their Battle of I-80 NBA Playoffs first round series. And gentlemen, it has not gone the Warriors' way the first two games in Sacramento. The Kings eked out a victory in Game 1, 126-123. In Game 2, you could say that things really went poorly, and it went from bad to worse in that fourth quarter. Obviously, with the flagrant 2 on Draymond Green, and then things getting away in the last few minutes of that fourth quarter, it just looks bad in terms of how the Warriors have played those two games in Sacramento and the pile-on with them suspending Draymond Green for Game 3. And we've talked a lot about this off-air. And Marco, I'm looking forward to getting your thoughts on this as well. But I would say the suspension this time around for Draymond Green, as opposed to when he got suspended for his scuffle with LeBron James in the 2016 NBA Finals, I just felt like this suspension was more of a reaction based on his history rather than the actual incident itself. I don't think any other player gets suspended if it was not Draymond Green in that situation. Marco, I'll start with you. The history was at play, and the NBA admitted that the history played a factor in this suspension.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that that's basically why he was suspended. He got out the history of the technical fouls, the ejections, you know, like you mentioned with the LeBron James back in 2016. I didn't think it was worthy of a suspension. And unfortunately, though, this is what we live in. We live in times now where your past actions are gonna, you know, will determine what kind of a punishment you get. And I've seen this in the NHL as well. With when you have repeat offenders. I mean, Rafi Torres is a guy who comes to my mind who's like a repeat offender of bad hits and what have you. So, you know, with Draymond Green over these last, 7-8 years. Yeah, he's established a reputation for doing stuff like that. Now, you know, I think that my opinion is that this doesn't happen. He doesn't stomp on Sabonis, and Sabonis isn't grabbing his ankle. Sabonis intentionally, I believe, did that to try to get the reaction that he wanted and he got. And yeah, I think he knew that that was going to be an automatic ejection. And flagrant 2 is what they ended up calling. But, you know, they say it takes 2 to tango. And I think that if you're going to suspend Draymond Green, you should suspend Sabonis because he was the equal part of it as well.
I thought this much. I thought if anything, if Draymond deserved anything, maybe a fine. Definitely not a suspension. If they wanted to fine him some money and make him pay some money to the league, I would have been okay with that. This suspension bothers me too because, I mean, not only – if you look at the video again, not only did Sabonis actually grab his ankle initially on the play as they're both coming – I guess Sabonis goes up. He grabs Klay Thompson and tries to throw him down, and he actually spins Klay, and Klay actually runs away. If you say – you guys see that on the video?
Yeah.
Yes.
So – yeah, it's a dirty play, but I'll say this much. The problem is Draymond has the history. I looked up his technical fouls. So career, including this season, Domantas Sabonis has 11 career technical fouls. Draymond Green got 11 technical fouls in the 2014-2015 season alone. Mm. In one season, he had 11 technicals. Ever since then, he's had no fewer than 13 after that. So he's had, like, I'll just run down from the 2015 season on. 11, 13, 15, 15, 16, 14, 14, 14, and 17. For a total of 137 technical fouls. That's insane. I mean, granted, of those that he gets every year, and if you exceed 16 in a season, you earn a one-game suspension. So that means Draymond got suspended for one game during the regular season this year. I would say of any technicals that Draymond gets, I think about six of those are probably on reputation, and the other 10 are probably legit. So I'll say this much. I'm not going to mention who this colleague is because I don't want to put his name out there, but I agree with him that Draymond's act is really worn thin. I mean, I'll say this. When he's on your team, it's like having Barry Bonds. You definitely want him when he's on your team. When he's not on your team, you boo the guy like crazy and you hate him. And I just think that the writing on the wall for the Warriors came with that Jordan Poole incident in the preseason before the season ever started. I just think he's on such thin ice, even in his own organization. But the problem is Draymond doesn't – a couple things. He doesn't take accountability for anything, so he doesn't even – I mean, granted, he's right in what he said as far as, like, where was he supposed to land his foot if the guy's grabbing his ankle and he has nowhere to go unless he falls on him. But at the same time, Draymond likes to antagonize. He ends up, you know, inciting the fans, almost creates a Malice in the Palace Part 2 situation. And the other thing that was really bad, unfortunately, was the commissioner was in the building. So that wasn't real smart. That's pretty stupid. Now, given that, what I find really egregious on the Kings' part is that the person who meted out the ruling, Joe Dumars, who was on one of the biggest, as you guys recall, the worst team in NBA history for physical violence, right? The original Bad Boys.
Yeah.
I mean, and then on top of that, I guess Dumars used to work for the Sacramento Kings. So that's, you know, that's not really objective right there either. So anyway, given that, I do understand the suspension happening. I think my bigger complaint is it should have happened like the next morning. I kind of find it a little suspicious that they waited until 24 hours to meet it out. But that being said, you know, the Warriors are in a tough situation. And the one thing that's interesting about the Warriors is even though they've had all these years of winning all these titles, they're the only team I can think of that doesn't get fouls called in their favor or calls in general. In fact, the Warriors only had one call in the game in game two that went their way, and that was an obvious double dribble by Klay Thompson where he scored a basket. And the TNT guys are kind of laughing about it. But other than that, I didn't see anything go in the way of the Warriors. Steph Curry never gets any foul calls. That guy just goes in for anything in the lane, and he gets hacked every single time. And it's just unfortunate that that things aren't a little bit more equal.
And if you think about it, guys, since opening tip-off of game one, not much has gone the Warriors' way. The Kings are getting a lot of the breaks and a lot of little slaps in the face building up to the Draymond Green suspension. Ryan, I told you off air about how I just was laughing hysterically when Mark Jones was assigned the game for ESPN. I mean, my God, who do you think he's rooting for? My goodness. And you go to game two with the Draymond Green suspension. You got to give kudos to Sabonis. What a hell of an acting job. There's no other way to say it. There's no way you can convince me that he was in as much pain as he displayed. And I think them listing him as questionable for game three is just histrionics. He's going to play. I'd be surprised if he's even feeling ill effects at all. And we've mentioned this, how baseball did a good job this year of cracking down on wasting time as far as batters wasting time and hitters wasting time. I hope I live to see the day, gentlemen, when the NBA cracks down on player acting. Marco, the one thing the Draymond Green suspension has done, which I don't like, it's taken the attention away from just how much the Warriors have underperformed. We're not talking about what the Warriors need to do to win game three or win game four. We're just talking about, woe is me, Draymond Green's been suspended. It's the Warriors against the world. Let's try to turn our attention towards that. Marco, what did you see in game one and game two
that the Warriors absolutely cannot afford to do in these next couple games at Chase Center. To me, the turnovers top the list. What else do you think?
Well, look, you know, I want to say that the Kings are deserving of that number three seed. They played their asses off in these first two games, and to the point where, you know, you could say they deserve to have won. But with that said, the turnovers thing has just been killing the Warriors in this series. 20 of them, you know, the other night. And, you know, I think they were definitely double digits in game one. And they just cannot have that against this team. The Kings are too good. They got too many weapons that could turn those turnovers into fast break points or three-pointers. You know, De'Aaron Fox, he's won the first ever clutch player of the year because of what he can do on the court. He's definitely their best player. You know, but then you throw in Sabonis, you throw in Malik Monk, you know, Davion Mitchell. All these young guys that they have, and they're performing at a high level. But even with that said, once again, I think the Warriors are still the better team. They just haven't been playing like it. You know, you have these silly turnovers of them forcing passes, telegraphing passes, things that a veteran championship team should not be doing at this time of the year. And, you know, the fact that Jordan Poole, too, has also stood out where he's just driving out of control down the lane, trying to force up shots instead of just playing the ball movement, which is what the Warriors offense is totally based on. You know, and the fact that he gets in there, especially late in quarters where he should not have the ball in his hands. Okay. You know, if Kerr needs to put Curry in for like the last 30 seconds to 60 seconds of a quarter, then so be it. I'd rather have the ball in his hands than Jordan Poole's hands. You know, I think that's been also what's led to a lot of turnovers. And you know, I don't want to get started on the referees because, you know, you're right when you mentioned earlier about how the Warriors don't get any calls. They don't get any breaks their way. You know, you look at that third quarter, all of a sudden Sacramento's in a bonus 2 minutes into the third quarter. That's unbelievable. And that should not happen because, you know, the referees are calling all these ticky-tack fouls against the Warriors and yet, you know, letting Sacramento get away with whatever. So that's my whole thing on the referees. But still, the Warriors, again, they've been up in these two games. They've had a chance to take control of the games, get out to a big lead, but then the turnovers all of a sudden feed Sacramento. They get these fast break points, and then all of a sudden the momentum's now back on their side. You know, especially with that crowd going as crazy as they were for these first two games, you know, that's something that the Warriors, they had a chance to shut that crowd up and they didn't do it. And, you know, now they are coming back home for game three and four at the Chase Center. They're going to have their crowd with them, but this turnovers, they need to clean that up. And I wish there was, you know, a magic formula or just something that we could just instill in them and not have them do that. But, you know, and this maybe comes down to coaching. You know, right now, Mike Brown is out coaching Steve Kerr in these first two games, and I don't see any other way that's different from that. So Kerr's got to step up too, and so do the players. You know, they have to just, you know, keep control of the state of the game as far as the pace goes. You know, you don't want to get into an up and down type of thing with the Sacramento Kings because they're faster and they're more athletic than the Warriors. That's a given. So I think the Warriors can control the pace of the play without forcing passes, without making silly turnovers. You know, eventually they might get a break or two with the referees. We'll see. I'm not going to count on it. I'm not going to hold my breath, but that's what they need to do going forward. They want to get back in this series in these next two games.
Ryan, I was talking with a Warriors fan recently. They asked me if the Warriors win game three and four, do they now sit in the driver's seat? And to me, it depends on how they win games three and four. If they're getting 10, 15, 20-point wins in games three and four, I'm thinking, okay, you get one at Sacramento. But if they're getting like these really close wins in games three and four, I don't know how much better we feel about that. What do you need to see from the Warriors in games three and four to where you're saying, okay, I think they're going to be the better team and end up winning the series eventually?
As Steph Curry always says, locked in, and they're not locked in. And they've been having this problem. I was there at game one at Golden One and saw firsthand. I saw the Warriors make a lot of really bad passes on their own. They weren't being forced by the Kings. I mean, that was a clean game. There's no Draymond Green, you know, Sabonis situation to talk about in game one. And the Warriors just lost that game by 3 points when they had the lead for most of the most of the fourth quarter, but there were like 20 something lead changes. And the weird thing right now is I can't seem to go on to NBA.com and find the stats from game one. You can't find it for some reason, unless I'm looking somewhere incorrectly. It only shows the when you look up the page for the playoffs, it only shows the results from game two on, which is really weird. I'm like, what happened to game one? Anyway, that being said, you know, the Warriors have also, I don't know what it is with Steve Kerr. He's been like just running through his core guys and just playing them way too many minutes. I've guessed it a few times on Locked On the Warriors podcast with Cyrus Sotsis. And Cyrus is like, he's going off constantly about why a guy like Jonathan Kuminga doesn't get more minutes or why Moses Moody doesn't get more minutes. And both those guys are pretty hard-nosed players. And the biggest problem the Warriors have is they don't have size. They really don't. I mean, they really haven't – the Kings definitely have the size advantage in this. Obviously, Sabonis is like 7'1", but they have the other guy on the floor too for them that's a backup center, and he's also really, really tall. Alex Len. Yeah, correct. Yeah. Thanks, Marco. Yeah, he's huge. He's another tall guy. And so the Warriors don't, you know, they got out rebounded really badly, or not in the last game, but game one, I believe they got out rebounded like 58 to like 46. So, in fact, in the last game on game two, the Warriors actually got the rebounding edge there. But overall, they're just not, they're just not doing enough, and they really don't have the focus, and that's really what's killing them. If they don't get better focus, and probably, you know, even though you're asking a lot out of Andrew Wiggins, who hasn't played since the All-Star break, and all of a sudden he plays in back-to-back playoff games, I'm just not really encouraged by what I'm seeing out of the Warriors. I mean, the upside, of course, is yeah, they play really well at home, and you know, obviously they've got to win the next two just to hold serve. So once that happens, then you got game five, and maybe hopefully, Lowell, you might be able to attend that game. And I just think they got to win. They obviously have to win a game at Golden One Center. That's the bottom line. The Kings don't. I mean, the Kings obviously having the home court advantage. They could afford to just win their home games and win this series.
That's a big problem for the Warriors. You look at the regular season record, terrible on the road and amazing at home. And I think that's got to come into play, Marco, in games three and four. The Warriors need to win games three and four. And I think they need to be decisive enough to where you're seeing, okay, the Warriors are better at home than the Kings, because let's admit it, the Warriors could have won game one and they could have won game two. So the games are closer in Sacramento than they are in San Francisco. That's what we need to be able to say to feel optimistic about the Warriors' chances.
Yeah, you're right. They need to come home and show that their dominance that they've displayed during the regular season. You know, 33-8, I believe they were at home this year, second best home record in the NBA, right behind the Memphis Grizzlies, who haven't been playing that well at home in these first two games against the Lakers. But I think they won tonight. But anyway, the fact is, you're right. They do well at home, the Warriors do. And you're right, they need to come out and they need to have a great first 5 minutes of the first quarter. Starting tomorrow, that's key. They got to get off to a great start. If they don't get off to a great start, then you start chasing the game. And when you start and you're chasing the game, you start doing things that, you know, you get a little desperate and get out of your rhythm. You get out of your game plan. And that's what I saw what happened really in game two, especially once they got into foul trouble in that third quarter. It just seemed like they were too busy trying to get that 5-point play or the 6-point play, and it would lead to another turnover. So anytime they got it close to like 2 points, 3 points, Sacramento would then go on like on a 6 or 7-0 run, and they would get the lead back up there. So the Warriors, again, and this is all about, again, the whole attention to detail, not turning the ball over, like Ryan mentioned, because those were a lot of sloppy, just, you know, passes that the Kings did not force on them. You know, I can understand if they were up in the Warriors' face, just pressing them left and right and causing, you know, those turnovers, which I would say maybe out of the 20 that the Warriors had, I'd say maybe four or five of those were the result of good defense by the Kings. The rest of them were just bad, awful, silly passes that, you know, one, they did not need that make. And again, the ball movement, when they have that going on and that less one-on-one isolation type of thing, like the way Jordan Poole likes to play for some reason, I don't know why, you know, this guy's been there, what, fourth year, and he still hasn't gotten it. And he has just times where he just, you know, decides he wants teams to take the matters into his own hands. And that, you know, you can't do that. Okay. Now, if Steph Curry wasn't there, okay. If Klay Thompson wasn't there, okay. But when you got him, those the Splash Brothers, and you got Andrew Wiggins, who can, again, hit, he was the biggest clutch player in game two for the Warriors. He came up with big threes, big baskets when they needed him the most. So when you got those three scorers, and you have a Draymond Green that's able to facilitate the ball, obviously we're not going to have him tomorrow, but that's what Draymond Green's role on the offense is to facilitate the ball, find guys down, cutting into the middle, getting easy layups, easy dunks, right? Or driving, kicking out, and finding the wide open guy from beyond the arc. They need to stay with that formula. And if Jordan Poole can't figure that out, then he cannot play in the game. Okay, his minutes need to go to Moody, DiVincenzo, whoever. And Gray, and I agree with you. Kuminga needs to be in there because he's an energy type guy. And he's the guy who can at least bang around with like Sabonis and Len and those big dudes that they have and have the athleticism of a Malik Monk as well. So, yeah, I want to see Kerr start using his bench more because that's another thing, too. I think in the second half, those guys start getting tired because they've been playing so many minutes
right
in these two games. So for the fact that they got to come out and dominate this first quarter and send the message to the Kings that, you know what, we're not going away. We're on our home turf now, and we're gonna play Warriors basketball, and that's what has got to happen from the minute that tip-off hits tomorrow night.
I'll take it a step further. I think, a first quarter is important, but let's just look at the box score of game two. The Warriors outscored the Kings 23-17 in the first quarter, but Sacramento came right back and outscored the Warriors 41-29. So, you know, the Warriors need a big quarter in the next game. Preferably, it'd be great if it was the third or fourth quarter. I say the fourth quarter because that's the last quarter. So if the Warriors can come out and dominate a quarter, in addition to having a strong start, that's what they need. Because I think just having a good first quarter is not enough. Given that, though, that is important, Marco, because I've covered so many games in the regular season this year at Chase where the Warriors were chasing the game. And they would, you know, by the grace of God, they would somehow find a way to win. But this has been a really sloppy year for the Warriors, and they don't have history on their side. I know, Lowell, you like to point out statistics. The Warriors are the least amount of wins for a defending world champion coming into these playoffs. So they've got a lot of things kind of stacked up against them. It's almost like watching March Madness in a way. You know, they're almost like one of these lower seeds that has to try to make it all the way to the end. So, again, they have the talent, they have the potential to win these games, but again, they lack the focus. And Kerr is not doing a good job again on his rotation, as we said. You know, he's playing guys poorly and overextending their minutes, and that's resulting in these losses, I think. So that's partly the blame there, and the rest being the focus.
And gentlemen, as we wrap it up, the Warriors, if you think about it, this is, I know, the fourth season at Chase Center, but the second season of playoffs at Chase Center, and this is the first time that a Stephen Curry-led Warriors team is down 2-0 in an NBA playoff series. So, Ryan, Chase Center absolutely needs to come alive in only their second season of seeing playoff basketball. The Warriors are going to need their fans probably more than ever.
You know, if I'm the Warriors, I'm sure they're going to have, like, you know, they have a way to, like, they have this ring the bell when the players take the court and whatnot. I'm sure they're going to try to hype E-40 as much as possible and bring him into the mix just because of what happened with his situation where he supposedly got ejected for, like, you know, getting into it with fans or standing too much. Why are you at a basketball game? You're there to stand, especially in the playoffs. I mean, that's just really absurd. I thought that was really stupid. And I saw the behavior of some of the Kings fans. I mean, they acted like, and you even told me, well, after the fact, you said, you know, I think maybe you saw one of my stories where I was kind of shooting a little bit of video as fans were leaving the concourse. And, you know, they acted like they just won the NBA Finals. They won their first playoff game in 17 years. So let's, you know, let's be a little realistic here. Now, granted, we don't know what's going to happen in the long run. If the Kings go on to win this series, then yeah, they, you know, most likely they totally earned it, you know, aside from the Draymond excuse. But, you know, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and yeah. I just think, you know, the reason why I mentioned about the first period being key, because you want to keep that crowd into the game. You know, obviously they're going to be fired up at the start, but, you know, if the Warriors can come out and, you know, have like a 30 to 20 type of first quarter, well, that's going to keep them into that game, and that's going to keep them going in that second quarter. Yeah, they definitely had a letdown in that second quarter. You just saw the body language, you know, letting Malik Monk get a couple of threes right off the bat. And it almost seemed like they were shocked at that point and almost didn't know how to recover. And you know, yeah, they cannot do that. They got to keep their foot on the pedal, the full 48. And then I think the way you do that is by, you know, getting in more guys off the bench and in the rotation and not just having 7 or 8. You got to have at least 9 and 10 stepping up in there. And, you know, so that way, you know, this has been a physical series, okay? Notwithstanding what Draymond and Sabonis did, this has been a physical series, and it's going to continue to be that way. And I think if you get guys like Moody and Kuminga and Jermichael Green in there to take some pressure off Kevon Looney. You know, Kevon Looney was in foul trouble most of that game too, because he was the only one able to bang bodies in there down low with those two guys, with Sabonis and Len. The Warriors have nobody else other than Looney who can do that, unless, you know, Kurt can get guys like Jermichael Green and Kuminga in there. They have to be able to establish themselves. And I hope that Kerr can get those guys in this rotation and take some of that pressure off of Looney, especially with no Draymond Green. I mean, to me, it's at the most important that those guys get minutes and get quality minutes in this game three.
Yeah, and I'll point out one of the things the Warriors hopefully will try to do is make better on their threes. Even though as a team, they shot almost 33% with 32.5. Klay and Steph combined to go 8 of 23. That's not going to get it done. The Warriors got to stop being this team that they used to be years ago, where they were over-relied on their three-pointers because they couldn't get enough penetration in the paint. And even Draymond in game two only had 5 rebounds. So, you know, that just – in fact, yeah, nobody in the Warriors had double digits of rebounds. So, well, of course, the Kings didn't either. It was just one of those games where I guess rebounds were kind of hard to come by. But, yeah, overall – they've got to just do a better job of trying to control the glass and control their threes and the turnovers.
Well, the Warriors don't have any cute catchphrases like the Kings have with Light the Beam, but if the Warriors want one, I'll give one to them. How about flip the switch? How many times have we talked about during the regular season, wait for the playoffs, they're going to flip the switch? Well, that switch was broken in games 1 and 2, gentlemen. Let's see if they can finally flip it in games 3 and 4. And turn the series around. Alongside Marko Ukalovic and Ryan Leong, I'm Lowell Tuckerman. We look forward to recapping Game 3 of the Warriors and Kings playoff series.